For those of you that are new, the process that we're using in our Bible studies is a discussion process where we try to teach one another. I think you'll be surprised at the wisdom that is within you and within everyone, and that our task here this morning is to try to find ways to get that out. And in many ways, the traditional roles are reversed, and I'm going to be the student and you're going to be the teacher. My role is to ask the questions, trying to find the questions that are helpful to us to, as we interface, intersect, as we try to take into ourselves the teachings and sayings of Jesus and some of the events in his life. So we invite you to put on your imagination caps and say whatever comes to mind. And don't worry if it's terribly profound, or don't worry if you haven't wrapped up everything there is to say on the subject. Don't worry if it leaves you with some unanswered questions. Maybe you'll go away more confused than you came. That's all right. That will stimulate further thought and consideration on the issue. Is that noise bothersome to anybody? And, if it is, we can shut it off, I would think. I'd like to begin with a reading this morning, as we've done on other mornings. And this comes from Philip Vernet, who is a French Protestant minister, from a little book called With the Master. And we have a volunteer in the village who's going to type this out and make copies if anybody wants it. Anyway, he writes, "The Christian life is a journey. Jesus said, 'They who do the will of my Father shall know.' And St. Gregory, 'Whosoever would understand what he hears must hasten to put in practice what he has heard.' Whosoever would understand what he hears must hasten to put into practice what he has heard. Therefore, do not wait for great strength before setting out." I always love that. "Do not wait for great strength before setting out, for immobility will weaken you further. Do not wait to see very clearly before starting." That's a particular trap, I think, for us Lutheran Christians. "One has to walk toward the light. Have you strength enough to take this first step? Courage enough to accomplish this little tiny act of fidelity or of reparation, the necessity of which is apparent to you? Take this step. Perform this act. You will be astonished to feel that the effort accomplished, instead of having exhausted your strength, has doubled it, and that you already see more clearly what you have to do next." So, a word from Philip this morning. Okay, we'd like to jump into the Beatitudes this morning. And you'll find that in the 5th chapter of Matthew, the 3rd through the 12th verses. You'll also find it in the 6th chapter of Luke, the 20th through the 23rd verse. But the version that we're most familiar with is in Matthew. So we'll use that for our study this morning. Could we have someone read it to us?
"Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons and daughters of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so men persecuted the prophets who were before you.
Okay. Let's put on our imagination caps here this morning and be free, be courageous to just say whatever comes to your mind. What images, what feelings, what ideas, what comes to you when you think of the kingdom of heaven? What is the kingdom of heaven for you?
Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within you, and also in other places he said, pray for the kingdom of heaven. So,
okay.
It's something that's hard to define.
Okay. So the kingdom of heaven is within and is coming. What else? What are your feelings and thoughts? Just say, go ahead and say them out loud. What words would describe for you the kingdom of heaven?
Harmony.
Harmony, all right. What is harmony? What is
getting together, getting along. Okay. No discord and strife.
Okay. Made up of different notes, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same.
Right. Black and white notes.
You can't have one note and be harmonious, right?
We're working together. Think of gears in your automobile transmission. They come end to end, we've got problems.
Okay. Working together. The kingdom of God is working together. All right. That's an interesting image, isn't it? All right. What?
Beauty, making beautiful music together.
Okay, wonderful. Beauty, making beautiful music together. Yeah.
Eternity.
Okay. All right. When you think of eternity, what comes to mind? What might be some other words or ways to speak of it?
In contrast, the shortness of our own individual life as compared to eternity, life forever after.
Okay. Okay, that which is exists beyond
our imagination.
Yeah, in time, space, and all right. Okay, what other images would you?
Not having to make judgments.
Okay. Right. What other images?
Spontaneity.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Well, the kingdom bring up a thought in everybody's mind that there is a king, that you'd be looking up to somebody all the time, that there is a leader, or the God is there.
Okay, so you would have a feeling that there is something, somebody to look up to. Who's all right.
The very word kingdom it denotes a type of government, right. A type of organization in which we exist in and which we live under.
Okay, something we live, there's some parameters somehow to this. This thing, whatever it is.
Okay. Something outside of ourselves that provides for our security.
Okay. Okay, what other images? It's important for us, I think, even though this is a word we've lived with all of our life, or a phrase, it's important for us, I think, as Christians, to make this as concrete, as relational, as earthy, as we can. Otherwise it becomes an abstraction that has little, and that's hard work to bring it down. We resist that. Yeah.
I think
It can be a wellness, a wholeness.
Wholeness, okay. All right. Anything else?
For me, it's an interconnectedness, just okay. Realizing that creation is ongoing and that people are interconnected with one another and with the rest of creation. That's, I guess,
the
kingdom
means
to me.
It's
ongoing.
That's a very helpful image for me too. Some being connected to things. Yeah. All right.
I think of a phrase that the kids used to come out with every time when they were very small, after they had opened all of the Christmas presents. Is this all there is?
Okay. So the kingdom is asking, is this all there is? That's maybe a really helpful question for us. Is this all there is? You know, maybe we need to go through life with a little bit of that question.
You never realize you got it.
Right.
I like that being connected. Okay. I just like to add with God now and forever.
Okay. Mm. All right.
Okay. Jesus said, come that you may have life in all its fullness.
All right. Okay.
I'd like to know more about what he meant by this.
By fullness? Mm. What do you think? What do you associate with fullness?
I'd just like to know what I'd like to know what he meant.
Have any images come to mind?
No.
When you said that, I just thought about the paper that is in the library there, Life in All Its Fullness.
Oh.
Dorothy Sorley.
Okay.
It is a paper?
It's in the paper. It's a paper that was given at World Council of Churches. I heard her say that, and I heard her make that presentation. And this reminds me of, you said Life in All Its Fullness, and I thought of...
Maybe the important thing in that is, well,
I was going to say, what I envisioned was this celebration and this incredible feast that we have when we look around and see all of life around us and
okay.
All of the beauty of the peoples and the cultures and the languages and kind of mixed together, and it's just
okay.
Maybe the important thing in that with a phrase or a statement is the first part, the blessed are the poor in spirit. Maybe that's what we're
wondering
about.
You're always one step ahead of me.
Sorry.
But now that you mention it, you're absolutely right. Okay. Us Swedes and Norwegians. Okay. Well, one of the things that I would like to invite you to do this in the next couple of days is to go to the art room, clay or other art material, or if none of that appeals to you, perhaps some writing or even wandering amongst the woods, if something comes upon you that somehow either creates something, let it flow out of you, or find something that somehow symbolizes for you a wider sense of what the kingdom of heaven is, or the kingdom of God. And I thought perhaps early in the week we can bring all our children that we have found, and we can share just a word about what's moving with us, and what we have, what's been bubbling up. Okay, let's move on then. Jesus is going to tell us something about what the kingdom is here, right, in the Beatitudes. And the first image that he uses is, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed, let's work with the word blessed. What does it mean to be blessed? What do you associate with blessed?
It's a lot of times translated happy.
All right. Happy. What are some other images that...
Accepted.
Accepted. All right. Okay.
AC,
yeah. All right. What are some other images?
How fortunate.
How fortunate. Okay.
Some benefits
more than you deserve. Okay.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
Being blessed. When you say blessed, usually it's not something you earn, it's something that's bestowed upon you.
Bestowed upon you. Comes upon you. Like a grace experience. Yeah. Comes
like
upon
a stamp
you.
Of approval.
What?
Like a stamp of approval.
All right.
Being approved.
All right. The experience of being approved.
You're all right. You know.
Yeah. Someone else is affirming you too.
Someone else.
Yeah. Or maybe it's someone within you. Huh?
Yeah.
Somehow you've gotten a stamp of approval. It's interesting how we live in a society that seeks to we've created all these stamps of approval that we all go after, right? So it's difficult for us to get in touch with our own stamps of approval. Or
feeling. I'm all right. I'm okay. You're okay. Or
yeah. The finest Jungian therapist in Phoenix is a woman who's about 65 who had studied for many, many years, worked hard at her own analysis, but for one reason or another never was able to go through an official training program. And she said after about 20 years of struggling, she decided that it was all right for her to assist other people. And so she said she finally was able to give herself a stamp of approval. And so she calls herself a tutor, and people go and bring their dreams, and she works with them, and she's wonderful, just wonderful, and very helpful to people. But she hesitated to do this for 20 years, even though she was probably better prepared than most in the community, and just because she didn't have that outer stamp of approval. Or we think, like in the reading this morning, we have to have it all together before we strike out, right? Yeah. And do something for ourselves. We have to know what we're doing rather than just taking one step at a time.
When I think of God, I think of perfection. You know, like, I don't think anyone has ever felt Jesus really, I guess, achieved a perfect life, but I mean, it's like the sun, you know, you can't approach it, you can't really even stand and look at it. It's something that's far beyond what I understand.
Yeah. I think we'll deal probably next week with be perfect. I like to use the text be all-inclusive. Because I think perfection means in our language without blemish. I don't think that's what God meant, but we'll get into that next week.
You were talking about a stamp of approval, and just when you mentioned it, it was something that I thought, now that isn't good for a person to take a stamp and stamp himself approved,
uh-huh.
or go to the store and buy a bunch of medals and hang on
uh-huh.
yourself.
Uh-huh.
But as you talked on further, I thought, well, maybe that isn't such a bad idea. To put a few metals on yourself.
Yeah, if that's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might. I worked in a psychiatric hospital for a while, and many of the patients would send away for all kinds of, you know, they get these, you could send for a dollar and you'd become an ordained minister and send someplace else and get, you know, they'd have portfolios of. And I thought, now that's interesting. What's going on there? I mean, let's take this seriously for a minute. So, you know, maybe we do need to we don't think highly enough of ourselves at times. I'm not sure that's not kind of a plague in our. And when we don't, it manifests itself usually in egocentricity and portraying to the world a kind of self-aggrandizement. So, anyway, we won't get off on that subject. Blessed. Blessed.
Full of graceful. Full of grace.
Full of grace. Okay.
Kept in mind.
Kept in mind?
Yeah.
Like, say something
like,
more.
Often, my most important gratifications come from just knowing that someone has had me in mind.
Ah.
You know.
Oh, okay.
Not needing to know any more than just that. Aware of my presence in the world, I guess that's another way.
That's a neat image. I had never thought of that before. So one way we could bless others is to keep them in mind, huh? Mm-hmm. Or one way we do bless others is to keep. And think how important it is for us to know that somebody else is keeping us in mind, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
it is important.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a neat image. Okay, any other images for blessing?
Well, maybe since we're talking about a kingdom, blessing would be realizing that we are royal children of God.
Okay.
Or just, you know, realizing our identity in relationship to God.
Okay. All right.
I would pick up on that too and say, when I thought of blessing, I thought of parented, mothered. I was meditating on this theme for the summer, under. Kept under her wing, the concept in the Bible is of a mother eagle, which is there's that cradling and comforting, and I was playing with the mother images of cradle and comforting, fed, and then an interesting one is pushed out of the nest when maturity comes and taught to fly and set free. And and then I've been kind of wrestling with male images because sometimes they're very difficult for me. And the father eagle kind of thing. What, you know, what is that in terms of being blessed or kept, being seen almost? I don't know. Kind of fun to think about.
Yeah. That is interesting, isn't it? Well, get me cooking in all directions. Okay, blessed are the poor in spirit. What does it mean to be poor in spirit? What does it mean to be poor in spirit? What do you associate with poor in spirit?
One explanation could be a disordered mental state or psyche, or people with mental illness, like someone who's depressed or having depression.
Okay. Okay. That certainly can be. Would be those words, poor in spirit, I think we would often use in that way. But what might be some options for us? How do we perhaps need to be poor in spirit? And what would it mean for us to be poor in spirit?
Don't think too well of yourselves.
Kick our pride.
Kick our pride? Okay.
Of course, this was written, I think, in light of the Christian envy of that day, and the Pharisees were so right about everything.
Okay.
And
all right.
He was just saying, hey, you don't need to be like that.
All right, so to be poor in spirit would be not to have to be right about everything. All right. Okay. All right.
Yes, the Buddha says spiritually poor.
Okay.
I can't get that in my mind.
Okay. We're going to work on it here. What could it mean to be poor in spirit?
A good friend of mine kind of rewrote the Beatitudes in his own way, and he said, the beggar's poor spirit.
The what?
Beggar's poor spirit.
Ah, okay.
Instead of spiritually poor.
All right.
Just realizing that there's a real yearning for more spiritual growth.
Okay.
Rather than being
poor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So, could he be saying, blessed are you when you realize you are poor?
Okay. All right.
I think I'm going back to that, your comment about the context of it, though. If the context is related to the Pharisees and that sort of thing, you sort of say, how I love you who don't know that you're poor in spirit. You know, if he is referring to the Pharisees, he's saying, blessed are you, for yours is the kingdom of God. I'm excited by that thought that he's lifting up, you know, if it is in the context of the Pharisees, what a caress that is, what a reaching out that is. Blessed are you. And maybe he was talking to them.
Okay. All right. Okay, what other images? What would it mean to be poor in spirit? Okay, downtrodden. What would it mean for you to be downtrodden?
Well, it seemed to me that if I were downtrodden, I'd be crying out for something, somebody to pull me out of this state.
Okay.
It certainly would be, if blessed me could be happy, I think you wouldn't be very. So then I was a dichotomy.
It might be important to ask, what dimensions of me are downtrodden? Are there parts of me that are downtrodden? And to acknowledge those, maybe that has something to do with
and that the kingdom of heaven, those things will be we will feel better that some of those parts of us that are downtrodden will be erased.
Maybe that's where growth comes from, is from the downtrodden parts. Rather than the parts that are well developed. Okay. It's an interesting image. It's an interesting struggle for us to get in touch with what it might be to be poor in spirit. Perhaps one of the reasons why it's so important for those of us who are wealthy to know poor folk is they have so much to teach us about what's important. But then if we internalize that, in other words, we don't want to just see Jesus' sayings relating to our social environment, although that's very much does relate to that, but we're working mostly here in terms of our own internal life, so that we're more able to see more clearly the outer dimensions of what he has to say. Well, for me, it has a lot to do with being conscious about, being intentional about those things that are lacking, to acknowledge my dependency, to recognize where I am, where I'm undernourished. Is that what it means to be poor? To be undernourished, impoverished. And if I can acknowledge that somehow, out of that hopefully will come growth. Okay, let's move along. What do you associate with the word mourn?
In mourning. Okay. So it's a loss. It's a regenerating. It's okay. A way through the problem of the loss.
Right.
The loss will always be there, but there's usually personal growth that happens in mourning.
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful.
It's really the opposite of comfort, uncomfortable.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I think when you're mourning, you're really unhappy, uncomfortable to that degree.
Yeah, there's a lot of discomfort, isn't there, in mourning. All right. What does mourning do for you? We've had some expression of that. What does it make you aware of, would you say?
Something you lost.
Something you've lost, right.
It makes you aware of yourself, I think.
Right.
Because suddenly there's not that other source of identity. It's, there you are.
Okay.
Aware of your vulnerability.
Okay, yeah, you become aware of how vulnerable you are. Yeah. Perhaps how dependent you were on whatever it is that you have lost or feel you've lost.
Makes you aware that you're not in control. There's something else you can
control. Okay. Yeah, that you can't control everything. You live in the context of a world that you cannot control everything. Right.
How does one distinguish between a sick mourning and a healthy mourning?
Okay. Yeah. That's a good question. What would you think?
Well, sick mourning is one where it's prolonged. Nothing good comes out of it, but it's almost a mourning for the sake of mourning, and feel good about it.
All right.
If I dare say that. A healthy mourning, I suppose, is to help you to imbibe yourself.
Okay.
To this matter of living.
All right. Okay. All right.
It seems that sick mourning would be returning in on yourself, like you said, about mourning for the sake of mourning, because that makes me feel good.
For
healthy. Yeah, right. A healthy mourning eventually turns the mourner out toward other people and something outside themselves. If there's more to live for than that one thing or person lost.
Well, I think mourning can draw people together because it's a common experience. Once you have mourned over something, it's a death or something, you can relate better to another person that has gone through that.
But then you do that in order to help each other pick up pieces and go on living.
Yeah.
Rather than to growl in
the endless. There have been several movies out lately. I think of The Big Chill. Did any of you see that? People come back together to mourn, and out of that has come all kinds of new awareness about themselves.
You might have this metal saying good morning to somebody. I mean, it's good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that morning.
Yeah. Almost like you did at the funeral.
Yeah, maybe that's what I meant unconsciously. I was telling some folks the other day how I slipped up and congratulated some people at a funeral. I meant to offer them my condolence. So maybe my unconscious knew something. That's interesting.
You take that, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted, and they have the kingdom is theirs too, is implied in that.
Yeah.
It's so wonderfully inclusive, because is there any humanity, and even I think other than humanity that doesn't know?
Right. Yeah, wonderful.
Sometimes I need a little touch of God or what that person, if, you know, if I'm mind the person, what that person did that was all unique or different, and what it meant to me. It's gone now, but I'll always remember.
Cool. I struggled a lot with the question of what, I tried to internalize that image. What does it mean to mourn? Inwardly, not for somebody outside yourself, but for things going on inside yourself. I realize that's a pretty tough question, but I think it's an important one, to allow yourself to mourn. The other question that's important, I think, is why so often in our culture, at least I've brought up a situation where mourning was very prescribed. In other words, you went to the someone died, and you went to the funeral, and it was all right to mourn there. But when that was over, then the mourning was done. In other words, when the cat got run over, you know, my mother said, "Well, we'll get a. I got a turtle in a little jar to replace it." You know. In other words, mourning was not, except in some socially acceptable situation, was not allowed. I recognize that even today when I meet people who have had a tremendous loss, and I'm still very uncomfortable with the fact that they're still mourning, and may still need to be mourning for a while yet, and I wish they'd get over with it, you know, because it bothers me to see them weeping, and
there's a point where they ought to start over again. Yeah. I mean, we can't relate to other people's feelings because we're not in their shoes. There was a lady once that was a pastor's wife, and she was always talking about people mourning the deaths, and finally her own husband died, and she said, "All these years I didn't know what I was talking about."
Yeah. I remember when I left my first parish, I cried in the pulpit, and several men afterwards said, "It's really embarrassing, Scott, to see a grown man cry."
And,
you know, they were uncomfortable with me mourning.
Isn't that funny that the women were?
It was the men. No, it was the men, yeah.
That's right. That was the culture. Yeah. That's
what it was. Yeah, so it's been hard. Yeah, it's been even harder for men to mourn. They're supposed to have a stiff, what do we say, stiff upper lip. And
macho.
Get on with it, see. So, but Jesus tells us what? He said, blessed are those who mourn, right? That's interesting, isn't it? For they shall be comforted. Well, I wanted to ask just again a word about the value of mourning. Tell us what you said again. I thought that was very helpful to me about that.
Which
thing did you say? Well, everything you said was helpful, but about the regenerative nature of mourning.
I think it's healing because it does break down our illusion that of our dependence and our happiness or our blessedness dependent on that person that we've lost or that thing that we've lost. Okay. Breaks down that dependence and shows us that we're not secure in ourselves. And so it opens up the possibility of new experiences and new relationships and a more realistic view of the world and how we're related to the world and to God.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about what is the value of mourning, both for a loss outside or perhaps a loss inside?
I think one of the values is the empathy for others.
Okay.
You know, if you've gone through it, I think that it's helpful to help somebody who is going through it.
Mourning is expressed in tears. At least the psychologists have seemed to intimate that unless there's an expression of this, it internalizes and is going to eat you up.
Okay.
So that tears and mourning is a kind of a safety relief pressure valve that gets out something. There's no other way to get it out of your system.
All right. So our you know, we must allow our feelings, our emotions, to be involved in the mourning process. Can't just do that work intellectually, right?
Or just turn one back about it and forget it, say it wasn't it.
All right. I tend to think about everything, so it's, you know, it's been a struggle for me to just, you know, to allow myself to feel about those things, because my initial reaction will be, now I got to go think about this loss here.
Was it Ron the other day who talked about the pity party?
The pity party, yeah. Well, see, everybody's going to go away with it.
I always heard this, don't sit on the pity party too long.
You sit on the pity party too long, okay.
Is that what you said?
No, pity party.
But I heard a pity party.
When you said this, you kind of implied that maybe we should think about not in relation to other people but about in ourselves.
Yeah.
I was thinking that I occasionally mourn the lost opportunities that I might have done something about.
Okay, all right. Very good.
And think that I should have done this or I was in this situation. I remember my son telling me one time how he mourned that he was. You know, we've all been taught, don't pick up the strangers on the road, you know.
Yeah.
And he said he went by this guy, and he looked like he was a soldier, because I think this was in maybe in Japan or someplace.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, I'd be gone a mile, and he said, I just couldn't get over the fact that I'd passed that guy up and I hadn't done anything about it. I went back, and he wasn't there. Uh-huh. And he's still thinking about it 10 years later.
So that struck him pretty deeply.
Yeah, and I have had times like that when I have felt that I should have done something and didn't do it.
Why would it be helpful to mourn the lost opportunities?
You might do something about it next time.
All right. Maybe it brings it to focus so the next time you wouldn't pass by so readily or something. Is that...
Yeah.